Well, hello there. Oh, I've got lots of letters for Santa today. And every year, they're the same. Some ask for toys, but a lot ask questions.
A yo-yo?
She wished to give me a present.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Christmas Specials We Love podcast. As the march to the greatest holiday continues, today we cover Alf, the Alf Christmas special. Thank you, Christian Blatt, once again for finding these obscure ones. I know we brought you WKRP. This one was something very deep and heavy episode. I'm going to tell, normally with some of these specials, we try to cover them in a way and summarize them in a way, being sensitive to you as the listener, knowing you may not have seen them. And I understand in everyone's busy life and busy schedule, they're not necessarily going to go and watch the WKRP in Cincinnati Thanksgiving episode. So we tend to make it so these will be freestanding. Whether you see the episode or not, you'll still be able to appreciate it. I'm pretty much sure if you're listening to this episode, this podcast, something like a Rudolph or Frosty, those are the ones you've probably seen over and over again. But if we want to keep the show going, we're going to go into some obscure ones. With that being said, I'm going to recommend that you actually do watch this one and you put it into your library. This, to me, was a work of beauty. You know, as a writer, I can see some moments that you probably could have trimmed and kept out, and I'll speak to that as to probably why it's not quite as tight as some of the Rankin Bass ones we love. But I will say, if you're looking for a new special to add to your list, then I highly recommend this. And as I was watching it, my wife peeked her head in, and you know, she's younger than me, so she was so excited. Alf, I love Alf! And as I'm sniffling, because it's making me so emotional, I said, this goes on the list, because we have our annual viewings of all of our specials. This one goes to the list. So that being said, Christian, you were the one who recommended this. I'm going to go to you with your general overall thoughts on the Alf Christmas special before we get into production notes and scene-by-scene breakdown.
I'll try to keep it simple. I was 11 when this aired, and I loved Alf. It was, I think, hands down my favorite show on television at the time because it's very unlike this. It's very silly. It's very light. It's an alien, lives with a family, wants to eat the cat because he eats cats on his planet of Melmac. That in of itself is a joke, but we don't have to dwell on that. And this is completely different. This is tonally so different than the show. I am shocked that it got made. And it is such a downer. And as an 11-year-old, I'm like, what the hell happened to Alf? You know? And I think that there is some genuine emotion, some real intent in there, but I mean, you deal with terminal diseases in children and suicide in primetime television. I think.
So wait, to you, it was a downer. I mean, oh, yes, yeah. I know there's this tough moment. So did you not enjoy it?
Oh no, not even a little. No. So listening to you talking about showing it to the missus, this in every way is what I don't look for at Christmas time.
I don't think it's for children, but correct. I think it's there's a beautiful message. And I was noticing, Christian, you're more Gen X. Ann and I are from the lost generation, as we said. We're not quite boomers, but I feel the younger you go, the more you wouldn't like this and you would see it that way for reasons maybe we'll get into or not. That being said, let me go before we get to Gen Y. our own Mr. Spock, Evan Westman, Ann Sleeman, your thoughts on this. And by the way, Ann, please don't be influenced by what I said. I want your honest opinion.
Oh, 100%. But maybe because we are part of the same gen, Kev, I resonate with what you're saying a lot. I was never an Alf fan. I wasn't an Alf hater. I know there were a lot of folks who were Alf haters. I just never really had any interest in an alien puppet. But that being said, and
real alien lived with a family, Ann. Real alien lived with a family.
Okay, sorry.
Don't use the P word, okay? I know I'm not the one who usually gets triggered. Don't use the P word about this.
I'm sorry, non-puppet, real alien from the planet
Melmac.
And Melmac. Evan, by the end of this episode, you need a politically correct term for puppet. I'll give it to the end of the episode. Okay.
I never realized. That it was
well, now you know, some of us, we have to be respectful of Christian's feelings. Clearly, he's triggered by the term puppet. So by the end of this episode, you will have a term for us that we will now apply on this show. And continue, please.
I won't use the P word anymore. And I didn't even really want to watch this episode. I know we talked about it last year also. But holy cow, what a show. I was blown away. I felt all the feels. I was amazed at the message of Christmas, at how poignant it was, how kind Alf was to Tiffany. It really impressed me how they handled such tough subject matter and was also able to interlude some moments of humor as well. So thank you, Christian, for this suggestion. I'm a little surprised that this isn't one of your go-tos, because is now one of mine also. I was shocked. I cried during it, and I'm like, wow, am I just in an emotional mood? But I did. No. I felt all the feels, and I'm really excited to talk about this today.
Yeah. Okay. Christian, maybe because maybe it's not something he's little children. Maybe it's something not to watch with little children. But okay, Evan, all of Gen Z is waiting to hear from you about Alf.
So I don't want to like disparage this for people who like it. I got to say this didn't really work for me personally. I'm not going to hate on it, but like it sounds like from what Christian validated some things in his response that I was sensing throughout. I don't really know anything about Alf outside of this episode. I didn't even realize he was an alien until halfway through, to be honest. I recognized him from just like seeing his face places, but I knew nothing. But I could kind of sense like this feels like he is a little bit out of his element in this episode with like things being this heavy. And, you know, maybe that is more effective for people who are fans of it. Although Christian, I guess, is sort of a counterpoint to that.
Evan, just to be clear, this is fascinating to me. Did you get to know the character enough, the character of Alf, which is this alien who's super sarcastic, funny, witty, kind of a pain in the neck? And did you feel it was just out of sync with his character to be reacting to the things going on in this episode? That what it was?
Like, I think the sincerity that is shown is fine. I just wonder, and I don't want to speak too much on this as somebody who's just been introduced to the character, but I wonder if maybe like this isn't the character to do this kind of episode with. Although at the end, I saw they did it as a dedication to a couple.
Let's save that. We're going to get into the
And but why it even sense, got made. Maybe it was cathartic for the people behind the scenes. And in that sense, I think that is a valuable thing. But for me personally, as a viewer, the tonal dissonance was dissonant for me and kind of kept me from being engaged. But I don't want to, you know, disparage this too much for.
But getting to know the character of Alf, you can probably understand why this and Garfield both come from my arsenal from as a kid. Those were in my sweet spot when I'm, you know, 10 to 12, you know. They're both characters who possibly, you know, they can try and give you a heartwarming aw shucks moment, but they're not who you expect to delve into really serious issues and you know, really sad things. You know, that's not who Alf was, except for in these two episodes.
Well, Christian, you know Permanent Midnight, the movie, was it based on Fusco or someone else who wrote?
That's the actor who portrayed Alf, Paul Fusco.
Also one of the show's creators.
Yeah. Permanent Midnight. I'm forgetting his name right now, and I'm trying to get it.
Ben Stiller played a heroin addict who was an addict, but he was a brilliant writer, and so he got a job on Alf, and he wrote for Alf. So, I mean, it's not about his darkness. It's about the fact that they really had highbrow comedy writers writing this show.
STAHL.
That's right.
The writer. Yes, I just needed to.
This was a very clever show. I was older than you, Christian, but I was a huge fan. Mm-hmm. I think that even the actor who played Willie, Max Wright, I just thought was brilliant in the straight role against Alf. And so I super enjoyed the series. This was definitely a left turn, but I thought it was beautiful. I just did. It was heavy. Definitely not something for children. And, you know, these are things that really happen. And the holidays happens to be a time where suicide is very strong. And as someone who's worked at the Children's Hospital for many, many holidays with my wife, we see this. We see kids that unfortunately are never going to leave the hospital for the rest of their lives, may not experience another Christmas or Thanksgiving. Children's Hospital here in LA, shout out to them because they just do such a wonderful job delivering to the kids and the families. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't want to bring anyone down, but there's some children that happen to be at that hospital because it's the best hospital around. But mom and dad who have other children, let's say in the family, who are working to feed those other children might live 7 or 8 hours away.
Right.
So often but these are real things. And when I think of the greatest Christmas film ever made and one of the top five, I think, greatest films of all time, It's a Wonderful Life, it's the same sentiment. So anyway, I think with that said, I'm recommending that you'd see this, but you don't sit with your children and see it. And let's kind of get into it now, some of the information behind it. And I think if you don't see it, I mean, the 2-line or 3-line synopsis is that Alf and the family, Alf the alien and his family, go up to an old cabin that Willie, the dad, used to always go to as a kid. And he's got this perfect Christmas all planned out for the family. And he's just all sentimental. From go, Alf, of course, ruins it, makes a mess of it. He gives away what the presents are. He changes the names to make it look like they came from him. I mean, just one thing after another, only to stumble upon the owner of the cabin who Willie, let's say, rents it from or, you know, gets it from. And you find out that later in the episode that that man has just lost his wife, is deeply depressed and now suicidal. But he delivers toys to the hospital. He fixes old toys and brings them to the hospital and gives them away to the children. Alf gets somehow sucked into the madness. He ends up at the hospital where he meets a little girl who's terminally ill. And, you know, by the end of it, you'll see the suicide is thwarted. And the little girl has some beautiful moments with Alf and the family. And the family seems to realize what Christmas is about, which isn't just hot apple cider and presents. It's about a lot more than that. Okay. That being said, for production notes, this aired in 1987. A little bit about Alf, 99 total episodes. And I remember in 1990, they wrapped season 4 on a bit of a cliffhanger, but they never finished the series. So we were left thinking Alf was abducted finally by a government task force that took aliens. But in 1996, the creator Fusco comes back and they make a movie where we see Alf rescued by the Tanner family and some friends and advocates, where he eventually is able to say goodbye, board his spaceship, and go home. So there is closure to the series. What I'm surprised, Christian, is they have had other versions of Alf's animated and CG, and the actor Paul Fusco is still around and the character's still there. Now, I know it's a Sony thing, and by the way, not to play big shot, but I know some higher ups at Sony, and I want to know who owns the IP, because I feel with alien talk being so prevalent right now, that comeback would be amazing. You know, the fact that they had a Men in Black alien task force even after him, and I thought, by the way, just a little inside stuff here, I thought we were doing the Thanksgiving episode, so I watched that, and that episode, by the way, is also beautiful, not as deep and heavy as this one, but has a lot of great moments in it. And there's an alien task force that almost arrests Alf in it. So it just, this is before Men in Black. This is before, you know, what we see today now that we've admitted there's alien life. You know, all this stuff now is coming out. So I don't know, Christian, did you ever think it would come back? I mean,
well, they did a good job because he, I think it was on TV Land. He had like a late night talk show style show.
At one point. Shows up on things, right?
Yeah, which seemed like a good vehicle for the character. The animated series I remember very well. It was basically geared at me, kids who liked the talk show. I'm sorry, that liked the sitcom enough that they would watch it. And there was a comic book that Marvel published under their Star imprint. So I bought that. So yeah, I mean, there, it was definitely a time to, you know, kind of spread the wealth. And then by the time 1990 hit, I mean, I'm 14. I don't care what happened in the, in that moment. But then I remember when that movie came about, I was in college. I'm like, well, I got to see what happened to Alf. You know, you kind of come back around sometimes in those things. You know,
it was very emotional when the spaceship flew away for the 94 episode, and the young girl who, you know, the star of the show, you know, where she's just kind of looking up with Willie. And it was, I don't know, I was older, but I was still swept away by it. Okay.
Yeah, it was sweet in the way that sitcoms in general were sweet in that time, but a little bit less so. It wasn't Family Ties, you know. It had a little bit of it, but I think because everything had to be, Alf is a fairly unlikable, selfish character, very much like Garfield, you know, and he was there for jokes. I mean, if you want to compare him to an on-screen persona for a person, it's like having David Spade live in your house. You know, he's there to just kind of say what he says. I'm talking about it in the sitcom standpoint. And they would occasionally delve into stuff like this. But yeah, so at least
Thanksgiving episode goes the same way, where he has his moments.
Yeah,
I see. I like it. I like when a character arcs, and especially for a holiday episode. But we'll get into it. So Steve Hollander also wrote Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures. One of the writers on this, of course, along with Paul Fusco, a Connecticut boy who created the character. As I said, he created Alf in 1984 while using no one be offended,
the puppet. P-word.
Yes, the P-word. Using a puppet that looked like an alien to annoy his family and friends. He wanted to create a show based on the character. He meets Tom Patchett, the future producer of the show, through a mutual friend, Bernie Brillstein. And if anyone knows Brillstein, he repped John Belushi and just a huge, huge, huge legend in our business. And especially
basically like everyone from the original SNL cast through like 1990, like all the big names from that show, except for maybe Eddie Murphy, Bernie Brillstein,
came through Bernie.
Everybody. Yeah.
And so he comes up with the idea for Alf, which they pitched to NBC's Brandon Tartikoff. And later I'll talk about Tartikoff. And I really wish I met the guy now as I learned more about him. He ends up, after the cancellation, as we said, he makes appearances on Talk Soup, Love Boat, and even was on the Hollywood's Greatest. And I actually remember that because I knew the production company and all the writers and the executive producer of Hollywood's Greatest. So I remember asking them about Alf. They said, oh, yeah, he was easy to work with, a lot of fun. Anyway, he goes on to create several spinoffs. And then in 2012, Sony gets the rights to this, and that's to be continued. I think I need to speak to him because I think Columbia Pictures has a 75th anniversary coming up, and I'm supposed to meet with them about creating some content around that because they know I'm a big geek. So guess what? We'll need to have a discussion around this. So Max Wright, who plays Willie. Again, he to me falls in a lot of these maybe sitcom actors that got stereotyped, but I think were just fantastic. And I can't see anyone else playing the role. The thing about him was, and I actually remember this, he did not like the character of Willie and he did not like working on the show, but he did enjoy getting letters from fans. He didn't like that he had to play a supporting role to an inanimate object. And by the way, Evan, feel free to play with that. Instead of puppet, maybe inanimate is a little offensive, so we maybe won't go there. Oh, we're just spitballing right now. He told People magazine it was hard work and very grim. He was happy when it was canceled in 1990 and was happy to have it over with. But later on, he had a change of heart when he knew that Alf brought a lot of joy to people. This happens with a lot of actors too, by the way. It's Shatner and, you know, with the Captain Kirk character and so many of them. And then I think when they go through the whole journey, they realize, you know, how special the character was and how meaningful it was. And they appreciate more. I also remember with him, and I should have looked it up, he got involved in some tabloid controversies.
Oh, yeah, did he ever. I won't get into the specifics of it, but he ends up, you know, a decade and a half later, he's the boss to Norm Macdonald on Norm's sitcom that's just called Norm. And Norm had some recollections about the kind of trouble that he got into, some unsavory locations, looking for things that people were surprised to hear that he was looking for in a public place. And
did this come up in your research at all?
I didn't see any of that on my research of him, so I guess I didn't do a deep enough dive.
No, that means they buried it, which is good. Somebody must have, maybe the owners of Alf did it. I mean, just to keep the brand fresh. I don't know.
That might be why he made the turn to liking it.
Yeah, he was, but he even hit the tabloids too, Christian.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll put in the chat what how Norm described it to me, and that way you don't have to edit it out of the show.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Christian.
Ann Sheedon plays the wife. And, after Alf, I know she had a recurring role in Judging Amy, but not much. Shout out to Cleavon Little, who played Mr. Foley, the man who is suicidal. He was a Tony and an Emmy winner, has a star in the Walk of Fame. And I know him, and we all know him from Blazing Saddles. It was a role that was meant for Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor was co-writer on that movie, but Richard Pryor was so extreme and hardcore that they didn't want to take a chance on him and put him in a movie. So Cleavon got the call, and I thought did such an amazing job. If you're a Blazing Saddles fan, I remember he also died way too young, 53 years old of cancer. Very, very sad. And Max Wright also, I should have mentioned, he was diagnosed with lymphoma in 95, had luckily a remission, but in 2019 it took him. Let's see, Carl Franklin, who directed this episode, which is interesting because this was shot, and we'll get into this later, it was shot different than a sitcom. He went on to make some really big films. I took the little girl who was playing Tiffany, Kerry Houlihan, did some small roles, but seems to have retired from acting at that point. I didn't look into the other cast members, probably should have. It seemed like the oldest daughter, who's now is 54, I think, married and owns a yoga studio. That's the last I heard of her, at least that when I looked it up. Okay, trivia and facts. And this is the part that I was holding back. The episode was actually based on a true story. Creator Fusco used to do a lot of things for the Make-A-Wish Foundation because so many kids would write to learn about Alf. And he would even get calls from doctors who would say, hey, this young girl or young boy just loves your show so much, can they get a picture or whatever? But on one occasion, he received a letter from a girl named Tiffany Lee Smith, whom the character in Alf's special, in the special Alf's Christmas, is based on. The real Tiffany was a 9-year-old from the Midwest suffering from leukemia and eager to have a face-to-face conversation with her favorite Melmac citizen, Alf. Someone at the local NBC station arranged for a kind of a video conference setup between them. This is, by the way, before FaceTime and those kind of things. This is back in the 80s, but for her to have a video conference in her hospital bed with Alf. And furthermore, someone had the presence of mind to record it. And this is where I think Brandon Tartikoff is cool, not only for greenlighting Alf, but he saw the tape and said, we need to make a Christmas special around this story. And again, like that's when you know something like this gets made, it's someone at the tippity top who says, we're doing it. I mean, you know, The Odd Couple wouldn't have gone beyond one season if it wasn't the one guy at the top who said, no, I don't care about the ratings. It's a good show. We're keeping it. It's very rare you get somebody with those kind of cañones, but he did. I think it's so cool. And I think that's why there were so many risks in it. But then you could see where the other cooks came in the kitchen. They tried to soften it as best they could, but that's why it got made. When Fusco talked about talking to the sick kids when he played Alf, he said, I would always try to keep the mood light and playful. I would make jokes and small talk. I would try not to talk about this situation, which they didn't want to talk about anyway. I would sometimes get a fact sheet about what they liked or didn't like, and then I'd throw it to them and ask, do you have any questions you want to ask me? I tried to make them laugh as much as I could and then say, hang in there. You be good. I hope to see you again. You leave them on a positive note. It's about all you can do. One rule he absolutely had was to never break character in front of the children. These children wanted to believe it was magic to them. I was a magician early in my career, and you never want to see what's behind the curtain. You want to keep it real. It's so interesting because it's kind of a callback to keeping Santa real in the episode as they do.
Yeah.
Fusco and Halder wanted to approach this episode a bit differently than the other episodes of the sitcom. The rhythm, the punchline, the setups, and the three camera setup were all changed. So if you notice, back then, three camera, but you know, today it's five camera, which Big Bang Theory, some of those other glossy sitcoms, they're on a set and you've got five cameras that are locked down. They usually do two takes. They'll do the show once, then they'll do it a second time. They edit it together in front of a live studio audience and you're out. Today, Evan, you've grown up with many more of the one camera, what we call the one camera shoot, which generally is a film camera, or today it's digital, but looks like film. And it's not that live studio audience that you're shooting in front of. Well, what was different about this, that it was single camera, it was on film, and it was shot on location. You could tell they were at probably somewhere in Northern California to see, you know, those, the cabin and places like that. But also even the hospital was an actual location. It was a former hospital. And it was one of the first dramatic roles for Alf. Fusco didn't want the episode to appear hokey, and it was unsure how it would come off or be received. Hollander said once he and co-creator Tom Patchett saw the tape of Alf and Tiffany, the show came together and flowed well. The main question was, what do you say to the little girl who is not going to see another Christmas? Patchett gave Holland some creative license as he allowed him to write outside of the writer's room. Now, the reason that's important is, and I will tell you as a someone who's written sitcoms, well, all those comedy shows, those sitcoms have giant staffs, and there's a writer's room. Now, you might have usually send the writers away to their own offices to, you know, give one draft pass, but then that comes back in the room and all 15, 20, I've seen even 25 writers now hack away at that script, trying to make it better, trying to quote, punch it up. For this one, though, the writing staff was not part of that at all. They did not apply that process. And to me, I could tell. And so,
yeah, may I ask you?
Yes.
On that point, when I saw that in the notes, I wanted to talk to you about it. Like, what do you think the other writer's attitude was towards Holland at that moment? Do you think
they fell in line? You have a young girl who's sick.
Okay.
Yeah, everyone fell in line. Everyone got quiet, walked away. And by the way, these are the bosses, so they're not saying
right.
Boo. I'm telling you why, as a manager myself and as a producer myself, why it's the right move. And Christian, you probably could concur with this, but this is what I wrote down in my notes. The last thing you want is a group of semi-sociopathic, angry, attention-seeking comedy writers anywhere near this story. You know, and that's what most of them like. I mean, a lot of them are even uncomfortable to talk to because they're just thinking of a put down in a joke for every single line that comes out of your mouth. It's almost annoying.
Right.
Listen, great if you're writing Rick and Morty or something like that, but where you have story, it's a little different. By the way, a lot of those people have their place because they're the ones that will punch the script up and make it funny. But there's a different art form to telling a story. And to that point,
would be fine if it was a regular episode of Alf where, like, I don't know, Brian had a car in the boxcar derby and Alf ate the tires or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
If it was like your normal, which, by the way, is a great idea. I'm going to write that one. No, but if it was whatever, for normal shows with no emotion, that works. And I think the decision to not like, all right, well, this script is done. Let's see how many jokes we can cram in there. There are jokes, but there's at least the attempt to minimize it compared to a regular episode of Alf. I mean, the percentage is I don't know, 10%, 20%, you know, it's much lower.
The scene with Alf as the doctor delivering the baby in the elevator was included to offset the heaviness of Tiffany dying. I saw some other moments in there that they brought in to offset the heaviness. To me, this really worked because, you know, the newborn baby gets named Tiffany. So to me, it was a really nice tie back. One of the opening scenes with Alf sitting in a child seat saying, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Which is the classic joke for kids in cars saying that stuff. But it did not make the final cut due to time. Funny, the actor, you know, Paul Fusco plays Alf when they shot the first take of Cleavon Little attempting suicide at the bridge. He yelled, jump, just get it over with, just to lighten the tone and help relieve a little bit of tension. Fusco says he didn't believe the actress Carrie Houlihan, who played Tiffany, realized she was playing a real person, as it never came up with the discussions. And of course, she's a child actress. She was young at the time. Yeah. So I can see that. When Holland spoke to the network to see if they wanted there to be a happier ending, he said it never came up, perhaps because it was a real life situation. They weren't inventing a story. And again, I think that's Brandon Tartikoff too, having his fingerprints on this. Fusco received letters from the real Tiffany's mom and from her doctor after she died. They both stated that allowing her to speak with Alf prolonged her life for maybe a month, and it gave her hope to hold on. This episode today is met with mixed reactions, but back in the day, it helped to maintain its high ratings. After it aired, the show got several calls from sponsors. The reference to It's a Wonderful Life is fairly short but powerful. On the snow-covered bridge with the old-fashioned red truck, Alf is dressed as Santa Claus, and Mr. Foley wonders if this angel is actually Saint Nick. And if you remember, of course, George Bailey, you know, meets his angel at the time. And the fact that Mr. Foley's first name is George, I think, was a callback to It's a Wonderful Life.
That's where I started bawling, Kev.
Really?
Oh, that part just got me. Yeah. When his name, like, I guess I didn't connect that his name was George. And then when he was on that bridge that looked so much like the bridge in It's a Wonderful Life, and then he turned around and looked at Alf, I lost it a little bit there.
We'll get to that when we get to that point. We'll go over, and I even have the quotes that he said. There's a quote at that moment at the bridge where he talks about, or he reads a quote out of the book with the doctor, and when Mr. Foley's talking to the doctor, and the doctor explains that the little girl is not going to make it, but how important it is for her to see Santa, and how important it is for kids to believe in Santa. And he reads a phrase that's an excerpt from a letter that was an actual letter written in 1897, entitled Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus. The story behind that is in 1897, Philip O'Hanlon, a surgeon, was asked by his 8-year-old daughter, Virginia O'Hanlon, whether Santa Claus existed. His answer did not convince her, and Virginia decided to pose the question to the Sun, the newspaper. Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus, ends up getting published by Francis Church. The editorial was first published in the New York newspaper, The Sun, on September 21st, 1897. Sources conflict over whether the father suggested writing the letter or she elected to write it on her own. It's a long letter, but I'll read the brief parts of it. And to me, even though this is written now, wow, 125 years ago, I just thought it was, I just really enjoyed the sentiment. And I think it still resonates. All minds, Virginia, in answer to her question, all minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist. And you know that they abound and give to our life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would the world be if there were no Santa Claus? It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith, then no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view in picture the supernatural beauty and glory beyond. In all this world, there is nothing else as real and abiding. Thank God Santa Claus lives, and he lives forever. 1,000 years from now, maybe 10 times, 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the hearts of children. So I just thought that was a pretty amazing thing. And I think that I love that they touched upon it, and I'm surprised we've not seen that in anything else.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of its own. I don't know if it's a Christmas special, but I know there is like a little animated like adaptation of that story. Maybe adaptation is the wrong word.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know how popular it is, but I know one of my younger siblings watched it a lot when they were little. It's like a
more recent event, do you think?
I think it's 3D animated, so yeah, probably. I don't know exactly when, but fairly recent, I think. It has like Neil Patrick Harris in it, I think.
Okay. we may have to explore this at one point. So that being said, let's take it scene by scene. They're all singing the 12 Days of Christmas as they're driving to the cabin. Inside the cabin, Willie notes how nothing has changed since he was a kid, and he goes crazy reminiscing about all the Christmases there. Willie tells about how his family first stayed in the cabin and when they lost their house, and then yada, yada, yada. But Alf brings in a branch of holly and is wearing Kate's Christmas present to Willie. He's wearing a sweater, and it turns out he opened the presents that the wife was going to give the husband. And then he proceeds to reveal everyone else's presents, what they're going to be, and they notice that he changed all the tags to say that the presents were him. And soon enough, the son, who's also a Cub Scout, realizes that the, quote, holly that Alf brings in is actually poison oak. And this is when Willie finally snaps. You know, Alf, you know nothing about Christmas. You've ruined everything. Get out of here. Take the poison oak with you. Go as deep into the woods as you can and bury it. When he goes outside, he sees a red truck, which is driven by Mr. Foley, the owner of the cabin, played by Cleavon Little, as we said. And when Alf sneaks into the truck, he sees all these cool repaired toys. These are the toys that Mr. Foley is going to give to kids at the hospital. Well, Alf, because he's so excited to be with all the toys, decides to just go along for the ride and stay with the toys. Before that happens, Mr. Foley gives Willie an envelope, but says, please do not open this until Christmas. The last thing he says on the way out is, oh, and by the way, my wife, Margaret, passed away 2 weeks ago. So now we're getting into some heavy stuff. Mr. Foley, dressed as Santa, hands out toys to the kids at the hospital. Alf is actually in the toy basket posing as a toy. And Mr. Foley gives Alf to a girl named Tiffany. She names Alf Amanda and starts playing with him like a doll. The nurse comes in and takes both of their temperatures and turns out the light. Tiffany makes a tea party for Alf. Tiffany tells Alf that she used to have another girl in the room, but that girl got moved. I think the girl got moved because maybe it was too depressing to be around another girl that was dying. Was that the impression, or was it the other girl?
Well, dying? I thought it was even darker that she got moved because she got moved because she left in the way you don't want to leave.
It seems like they left it open to be interpreted either way, though. Like, there was room for both. Was the impression I got.
Yeah.
Right. I interpreted it darker, like you, Christian. I was like, ooh, I think she got moved out to the morgue.
To me, that's consistent with the tone that this story's always had in my mind of if just when you think it's gotten as dark as it can, boom, here's one more for you. So, I believe that's what happened. Yeah.
And she's about to put some earrings on Alvin. He's like, okay, that's right, draw the line. He's like, I'm a boy, I'm a male, I'm not a stuffed toy.
Which, by the way, in 1987, that sort of reaction to being misgendered was more acceptable. I would hope that if this were to happen in 2023, Alf would say, I appreciate the gift, but I choose not to identify as an alien who wears earrings.
Okay. Evan, were you okay with this?
I mean, relatively, yeah. I was mostly confused in that scene why he didn't speak up sooner.
He's sworn to not reveal himself to anyone because he'll be taken by the authorities.
Okay.
So he was
context then.
And then finally with humor, like, okay, I draw the line. I'm not putting on earrings. You know, he drops the shtick. He explains everything. I'm not from here and I have to keep my thing a secret, blah, blah, blah. And she decides to give Alf back in exchange for a normal teddy bear. And this is where Mr. Foley talks to the doctor. Mentions that one of the kids in the hospital told Tiffany that Santa isn't real. And this is when he showed her the Yes Virginia newspaper clipping. And we learn here that Tiffany's not going to live through the year, not going to see another Christmas. When Alf hears this, he goes back to Tiffany's room and wishes her a Merry Christmas. She shows him a picture she drew of the two of them. She's wearing wings in the picture, which I think is a nod to, you know, being an angel. She asks him if he's missing Melmac, his home. He says he does. And he talks about the stuff he discovered coming to Earth. She explained to him that Christmas isn't about presents. It's about giving of yourself. So they're starting to bond here. And I was a fan of Alf. I didn't think he was going too far of character because I can't see Alf as acerbic as he was. I can't see that character being with a sick girl and still being that way.
Right. I think that that's the difference, being with a sick girl, even, you know, the early reaction of, all right, I don't want the earrings. I got to get out of here. That's consistent with him. But then in the situation, he's like, even I'm not that much of a jerk. I should go back and talk to this girl. Because usually dealing with kids, you know, dealing with the kids in the Tanner family, Brian and Lynn, that, you know, there's moments for sure, but it's never as serious as this. So I think it is a very oddly humanizing moment for the alien to realize, like, oh, this is pretty rough. Let me see what I can do. I'm here. Let me see if I can, you know, make this sick girl smile, who's not going to get another Christmas, you know?
And I wish you watched the show more as a kid so you would know, but I didn't see him at Alpha as a piece of crap. I just saw him as a smartass.
Right. Know, it seemed like he was from Boston. You know, he was kind of sarcastic.
Right. Yeah. But he had a rudder. Seemed like he had more of a rudder than Garfield.
Yeah.
But he loved breaking Willie's chops. But that's why they were so great. They were so straight man to comedian, I thought.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it's a presence like having an Archie Bunker or Eric Cartman or maybe even a Bart Simpson on your show, you know, like.
But even they're more extreme. I don't think Cartman, although the Disney episode, he showed a little heart. That's probably the first I've seen heart out of Cartman in 20 something years, in the recent Disney episode. But no, I don't put him in with them either. Like those. I didn't see it. Back at the cabin, Willie opens the letter from Mr. Foley. It says, basically says, I'm giving you the cabin, where they're like, huh? And that's when the little boy Brian says, hey, wait, has anyone seen Alf? And he cut back to the hospital. Tiffany asks Alf if he can stay with her until she falls asleep. She tells him implicitly that she's going to die. They say they love each other. Alf cries. I don't know. And I'm going to have to go to you for this, because I thought this was really beautiful and sweet and very moving.
Oh my gosh. I 100% agree, Kev. Like, when Alf said, I love you back, in that short amount of time that he knew her, that really got to me. And to shit, like, I used to be a make a wish granter. So I understand, like, that personal connection that you have. And I thought that the sentiment that they were able to show in the alien to that girl was so profound and so close to what the wish granters actually feel when they're dealing with the kids and stuff. So I thought it was a beautiful moment. And again, another moment where I felt all the feels. I was like, it was so touching. Like, I think I even touched the screen of my iPad that I was watching it on, because it was so beautiful.
I thought it was really poignant too, because it was talking about going on to other worlds.
Yes.
You know, he was like, you know, I'm not in my world, and I came to a new world. And she's like, and I'm going to be going to a new world too. So, and I guess that the older I get, I'm not so much down anymore on faith-based content. You know, when I was younger, I was just more like, no, I'll leave that out. But I think faith and anything greater than ourselves is beautiful. And by the way, faith in Santa. But I think I thought it was just such really good writing, you know, for them to have that exchange.
Yeah. And the tangent, like you said, between his other world and her other world, and it made her feel safer.
Yeah. Like, it's okay. You're right.
It's okay. I can now have a safe passage, because this guy had a safe passage.
It worked out for him. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And when he wipes the tear, I thought it was beautiful. Anyway, now we cut to the cabin in the woods. The Tanners are looking for Alf. Cut back to the hospital, and we find a couple that's in labor. And by the way, Evan, this was the beginning of now what I see on television all the time, but the stupid, bumbling, semi-useless, mostly useless dad. This is now a staple in television. You just always, they have to just show us how stupid and useless and bumbling the father is. But this was evidence. And by the way,
no, I always think of that as an 80s staple with, like, Goonies and Ferris Bueller's Day Off, like, the main two I think of. It felt very fine.
I feel like, well, what dad did we really meet? Ferris Bueller, you have the principal, so he's a jerk. Yeah, but I'm saying
his dad's at work basically the whole movie.
And then you have the best friend's dad, who's not, he's owns all these $150,000 cars. It's not like he's a bumbling idiot. He's just a jerk. But this guy, I'm like thinking like, oh my God, what kind of parent was he? What monster did he raise? Right. You know what I mean? Like, I was glad, it was relieved to find out it was a daughter, because maybe she would have had a shot with the mom. But I'm like, this guy, to me, was just like, thank God Alf was there to deliver the baby and not this moron.
Not a dadfluencer, Kev.
No, hell no. Well, actually, you know what? Sadly, he would be the perfect dadfluencer. You know, he'd be all about the Graham. So Alf hides the stretcher that the woman is on. She's wheeled onto the hospital, and through a series of mishaps, she is now alone in the elevator. Excuse me, not the hospital. She's alone in the elevator, and the elevator breaks halfway up, and they're stuck in there. And out pops Alf, says he's a doctor from another area. While they're trying to unstick the elevator, the woman, Denise, her labor intensifies. So Alf, because the dadfluencer dad had the book on birth delivery, he's able to read that book and kind of help her through her birthing. But I thought it was the part that I thought worked for me, and even though we know now it was just put in there to lighten things up, what worked for me is when it ended up being a girl, not a boy, as they had thought. And when he suggested Tiffany, and she said, wow, that's beautiful. And it was almost, to me, it was one life comes in and one life leaves this world and another one comes in. So,
and I needed that moment then. Like, I needed that comic pause right there, because it had been so heavy. So I was happy they put that in.
But also, I just thought it was poignant. I thought it was very sweet that she was going to name the girl Tiffany. So to me, they always say when one soul leaves the world, another one comes in. And it was, I thought it was perfect. So, and I can always tell these are Evan's notes. Somehow Alf ends up back on Mr. Foley's gift card. I love the word somehow.
But it definitely doesn't matter. It just ends up there. Yeah,
they give us nothing.
Just take my word for it. He ends up back.
Well, I can tell you how. You want me to fill in the blanks for you?
During the commercial break.
No, he turned into, well, here's the thing. If the doctor, so Mr. Foley, the doctor, and the bumbling father were going to be present with the elevator, when it opens, they're going to see this frozen stuffed animal. And say, oh, that he would say, well, that's one of my, oh, geez, that's one of my toys. How did that get in here? And he's going to end up back on the cart. So needless to say, we cut to the cabin. And, oh, well, before we get there, the doctor did what Willie did and opens his letter for Mr. Foley that he was not supposed to open till Christmas. And he sees that he's basically leaving him every cent he has. And then the doctor says, wait, this is not a donation. This is, like, he realizes this is almost a last will and testament. He says, please come by and talk to me next week. The doctor says to Mr. Foley, Mr. Foley just says goodbye. Back at the cabin, we see Willie trying to assemble the son's bike. And Brian keeps asking if Alf is coming home. And Willie assures him that he is. But deep down, they're all pretty worried because they haven't seen Alf. And they know it's cold out and there's a storm. Mr. Foley now is driving away from the hospital. But Alf is in the back. And, you know, we hear from the radio forecast that it's the snow is going to be worse, and it's especially bad around the mountain. And this is when Mr. Foley pulls his car over and gets out of the car, climbs the bridge, and is about to jump. And Alf, in his Santa outfit, also gets out of the car and says, no, don't. You know, and that to me, he's funny, Christian, because this, whatever came up on YouTube, this, when I put in this episode, this scene came up. And so I didn't know it was in the middle of it. So it was the first thing I saw. And I just, that seemed like, wait, what's going on here? That's not Alf. Mm-hmm. But going on the whole journey with the writers, to me, it seemed completely organic that he would say, wait. You know, he tries to, Mr. Foley, of course, is just like, wait, you must be a figment of my imagination. But thinks about it long enough to realize that, wait, are you Saint Nick? You're actually the saint, which to me indicates that Mr. Foley also has an imagination and has a belief system. And this is when they have a real magical exchange. And I actually took the opportunity to transcribe the dialogue between, which I thought was just beautiful writing. Mr. Foley says to Alf, ain't you supposed to be sliding down chimneys, bringing toys to children of the world? Because of course he presumes he's Saint Nick. Alf says, yeah, well, you think that's a one-man job in the old days, maybe, but now I'm an executive Santa. I have to delegate responsibility to people like you. Mr. Foley says, why me? Alf says, who better than you? You made it possible for Brian Tanner, Willie's son, to experience a Christmas like the one his father remembered his whole life. You brought toys to the hospital, and you brought a smile to the face of a dying child. Whether you know it or not, George Foley, you've been making other people happy all your life. Mr. Foley says, how do you know these things? Hey, St. Nicholas knows everything. I know when you've been sleeping. I know when you're awake. I know if you've been bad or good. You know, the whole ball of wax, which is so great. He just goes into the comedy. And then Mr. Foley says, then you know why I can't go on anymore. And this is amazing, you know, because now remember, Alf's overheard him talking to the doctor about the wife passing on. And he says, Margaret, your wife is gone. I'm sorry. You feel like you lost your whole world. Believe me, I can relate, because we know Alf's lost his world. But you have unfinished business here. There are people you're leaving behind who still need you. And if you know anything about Christmas, George, you'd know this. Christmas is not about what you can get, but what you can give of yourself. A little girl taught me that not so long ago, and I don't know where she got it. You're a good man, Foley, and I can't afford to lose you. I just love that. So, amazing. Of course, they right, and they drive back to the cabin. Mr. Foley drops Alf off. In the cabin, Brian says, this is the worst Christmas ever. When Alf comes through the chimney, he says, Merry Christmas to the family. And now I thought it was going to end there. And this is, to me, where, and if it did, it would be as dark to me as you perceived it, Christian. But it kept going. But before I go any further, I mean, and I'll go to you, because you were as moved by this scene. And I know everyone was probably sleeping at this moment or just watching to be polite. But Anne, yeah, tell me was what the scene meant to you.
When he was in the chimney?
No, on the I shouldn't have gone ahead when they're on the bridge.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Sorry. When they were on the bridge, I mean, I felt like I was watching the scene from It's a Wonderful Life. And again, with the tangential, like, I know what it's like to lose everything. And when Alf, or St. Nick as Elf, said that to Mr. Foley, and he could just so connect with the emotion of the person who was about to commit suicide, as he had just connected to the emotion of the little girl who was dying, just by telling the truth and sharing his story and being there and listening. I thought it was really poignant and progressive and very, very moving. And one of the main reasons why I think, like you touched on, Kev, in your opening remarks, that this is a must see every year, because it is so thought provoking and just a really good, like, let's reset. What is Christmas really all about?
Yeah.
And these are the feelings that I, you know, like, yeah, love and peace and sharing and giving of oneself.
Yeah. Giving of oneself. Yeah.
Giving of oneself. Like, let's all remember that's what we're supposed to do during the holidays.
You're a good man, Foley, and I can't afford to lose you. I also love, Christian, I love the characters that are this smarmy and acerbic and seemingly not caring, because then it means all the more when they do have that moment where they come through.
Right. I definitely, you know, agree with, like, that. It means a lot when, you know, to use again the example we keep going back to, when Garfield is like, oh, I don't actually hate Odie. In fact, he's probably my only friend. You know,
yeah,
I
mean? Right.
You definitely get those moments. And Alf complains about this family, but, you know, without this family, he would have been dissected by the federal government in Area 51, you know, years earlier, you know. Yeah. So I think that sometimes it's, you know, there's sort of this tough exterior for some of them. And yeah, I think that you feel like you've earned it, I guess, when you get emotion from someone like Alf.
Right. Well, so this was nice. You go back to Tiffany's room. And Mr. Foley's in the room, and he fixes her bed, and he has her helping him fix the bed. So you can see he's giving her a little bit of purpose and getting her mind off the situation she's in. But which I thought was even more beautiful is in come the Tanners, and yes. The family comes in, Willie and the family. And I love that they show her a Polaroid of Alf being like, hey, we know you know him. We know him as well. Wink, wink. We're in on it. And they come and they bring her all these presents. Meanwhile, over to the side, Willie gives Mr. Foley back his letter and says he can't accept the cabin, but we'll come back up next year. We'll take your invitation to come back next year. And you know, Tiffany, so things are settled. The Tanners now realize more what Christmas is about, which is about giving to this little girl. Mr. Foley obviously is going to stick around because he's got more to give. And the recent Tom Hanks movie that came out, it did well on the sleeper level. It was based on a European film.
Maybe one of you. Otto?
Yes. Very similar. And he has a line in there. He just wants to, his wife had died. And so the whole movie, he just wants to die. And then at some point he realizes life, God, universe wants him around a little longer. You know, yeah. He's like, I don't know why, but these people seem to need me and I need to be here. And so Mr. Foley has this really nice purpose. And just then, you know, it ends with Tiffany looks out the window to see Alf in the amazing station wagon. God, I would love to own one of those. Side note.
Arbuff.
Right. And so there's a look from her to Alf where, like, I see you, I get you. Then there's the voiceover of Mr. Foley reading the ES Virginia article. And it ends with a dedication to Tiffany Lee Smith, who's the real young girl who died, and then also Tom Kyle, who was the lighting director on the show. Yeah, really special episode that Ann and I are going to give. We're going to recommend. You know, well, listen, I'm not recommending Garfield to anyone, but I have come around on Mad Monster Party. I'm recommending that one, although I really would like a 1-hour version of it. I digress. I'm highly recommending this one for people to see, and obviously not with children, but I think it was beautiful. And I think it was very underrated. You know, on that note, I want to just remind you why we do this episode, why we do this series. It's for these classics like this to be remembered, to be preserved, and for the meaning of them to get out there. And hopefully if it resonates with you as it did with Ann and I, because the other purpose of this podcast is to extend the spirit of this season. Yes, the fun, but really the warmth and the giving of yourself. And so to me, this show really, this Alf, and thank you, Christian, for finding it, for reminding us about it. But to me, this is exactly why we do the Christmas Specials We Love podcast. I think we all know Rudolph, although there's a new interpretation with the young generation of that, which is sad. So hopefully we can rectify that to the next generation. But for people like me who are always looking for new classics or closet classics, let's say, I think this is one of them. And before we leave, and we waited the whole episode, and we should do some just really briefly, and just to maybe one or two texts and maybe just one review from Apple Podcasts, if possible.
Yeah, let me give you a couple of shout outs. Text from Wendy in East Haddam. Oh my gosh, I started listening last year, and as soon as it came out, just awesome. I'm in my 50s and RN. An RN, 35 years. My sister just found a picture, surprisingly, when I was 3 with my nurse kit under the Christmas tree. Who knew it would come to fruition? I can so relate to everything you're talking about, the childhood that we were all so lucky to have without having a lot. Please keep doing this wonderful ride down memory lane with all your reflections. I also love the show breakdowns. Do not forget Festivus. A little shout out to Seinfeld there.
We'll
another text. I got so many texts this week from 502 area code. Please cover Santa Claus is Coming to Town. It's my second favorite Rankin Bass production.
Well, that one is coming to me. Christian, you might appreciate this. That is my Dianetics. I base my entire life on Santa Claus is Coming to Town. To me, you just see that episode, you get all those lessons. It tells the whole story. I'm working myself into that place. I actually think we're going to do a few versions. I think there'll be the version, the multi-generational approach to it, where they can, Evan and you two, Christian, maybe Kelsey, can all feel free to insult the show and not get the meaning of it, have it go over all of your desensitized brains. But for me, because that one is so pure, I'm going to be definitely there'll be a separate episode where I'm going deep on that. But to me, that's my favorite. So I got to get there. I have to.
Step in front of the other, Kev.
I love that one. Thank you, man. I think that one's great, actually.
Oh, you do like that? Mm-hmm. All right. Maybe it'll be included in my shot list. okay, you guys.
But while I'm in the middle of speaking, I'm going to say I'm more interested than on any of the episodes that I've been a part of in audience feedback to Alf's special Christmas, because having talked about this for years, I don't think I'm in the minority on this. And I'm glad that you and Anne were able to connect with it. But I think it must be generational, because
eight and a half rating on IMDb.
Yeah,
that is this.
And when I went to see, there's a clickbait YouTube made by some of it looked like late millennial that was like Alf special depressing. But then when it was, I think he just did it for clickbait, because when I watched his episode, he actually loved it too. He actually really enjoyed the episode. So I'd like to know more from it. I don't think people are aware enough about it, to be honest.
I think that's true too. Yeah.
I will let Queenie watch it. Queenie's your age or younger. Let's see. Well, Queenie being my wife. And we'll see. She'll be the canary in the coal mine on my end to see it. But definitely good. Good. Yeah, please. 351-251. 2511?
Yes.
351-251-251-351-251-251-251. I used to have the Christmas jingle down with that. I don't want to do it right now because I won't remember it. And then we're at Christmas Specials We Love. We'll put up some videos there. You can comment to us there. And then obviously on Apple Podcasts, we love that 5-star rating. And we love your reviews, and for those people who do not appreciate our multi-generational approach, well, then there's plenty of other Christmas podcasts you can listen to. Okay, you guys, well, the March to Holidays continues. We'll be dropping a lot of content. Some episodes we did last year will be coming back, as well as lots of new content. It's right around the corner, as we say, but until then, put one foot in front of the other. And we'll talk to you soon.
You got to say, talk to you shortly.
Talk to you shortly. We can say that.